The opinions expressed in the following program are solely those of the host.
The following program may contain coarse language and is intended for an adult audience. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
Welcome to the hottest show on the Internet G-Band, broadcasting from outside the limits of convention. This is radio without borders, without rules, and without reservation.
With your hosts, Radio Free G, joined by super producer Mumbles.
Search for Radio Free G on iTunes, or you may head to the website radiofreeg.blogspot.com. Welcome to the G-Band.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. I'm your host, Radio Free G. It is near the end of September 2008. For those of you keeping score at home, this is the day that people are going to look back and say, wow, that was the day that everything went to shits. And the topic of today's discussion is pretty much the financial Armageddon that's taking place in the United States. For those of you that have, been living under a rock, banks are failing left, right, and center in the United States. Let me just give you a little bit of the history here. And this is from the CNBC website. They have a whole slideshow presentation on bank failures. The most notable one that has taken place in 2008 is, of course, Washington Mutual. Assets of $307 billion. They were just recently bought by J.P. Morgan Chase for $1.9 billion. How a company with $307 billion in assets goes under is very easy to understand when you realize that the assets on their books are other people's debt. Other people's mortgages are their assets. And when you can't pay the mortgage, those assets are useless. Why someone like J.P. Morgan Chase would pay $1.9 billion for these apparently useless assets does give one cause for concern. Ameribank went under. Assets, $112 million in assets, and the cost to the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the counterpart to the Canadian Deposit Insurance Corporation in the United States, cost them $42 million in public money. There's some other ones such as Silver State Bank, assets of $2 billion, Integrity Bank, assets of $1.1 billion. Unlike the Canadian system, you can go to the U.S., and if your name is Joe, you can open up Joe's Bank. It's not as regulated as it is in the Canadian market. Can be a good thing, can be a bad thing. It does fit with the whole American ethos of don't fence me in, and smaller government is better government, so they don't have the regulations. Yet, a functioning credit system led by banks is the cornerstone of any free market capital system. You have to have access to the credit if you are going to, I don't want to say live beyond your means, but if you're a business, you need access to the financing, you need access to your debt, you need access to money that you don't have that you can pay back later so that you can get the things you need today. Certainly, all the finance is beyond me. I don't know any of the finer points of everything that's going on down there. But in a really general sense, banks took on a lot of bad debt. They're going belly up. And now the federal government may, I say may, because as of the time of this recording, they are, the American Congress is sitting down with advisors and such, and they are trying to hash out a plan to save and give these banks some operating capital. We're talking about giving public money in the form of hundreds of billions, that's billions with a B as in Bob, hundreds of billions of dollars to the banks to try and give them operating capital. Now, I have managed to rip some audio off the web. It was from a Canadian business channel, and the person being interviewed is essentially trying to say that even though all that is going on in the States, Canada's going to be fine. And of course, Radio Free G, we are, you know, from sea to shining sea, coming to you from Canada. I don't know, every time I hear someone talk in this tone where, oh, that's okay, everything's going fine, with, you know, the 800-pound gorilla to the south of us, it makes me a little bit angry because people don't seem to learn from the past, and it makes me very afraid because there will be some policymakers who agree with what this person has to say. So I'm home on a sick day, and it's as good a day as any to be here and produce an episode for you. Let's get right into the audio of the clip that we have for you here today. We'll let the people on the clip introduce themselves. You can find it, of course, by going to bnn.ca. And I'd like to say thank you also to CTV, the Canadian Television Network, for making this available on the internet. It's one of the few things that they're using the internet for well, I guess. But here we go. Let's let these people explain to us mere mortals how the destruction of one of the, I would say, greatest economies the world has ever seen will have absolutely no effect on Canada, whose largest trading partner in pretty much just about everything happens to be the United States of America. I will be sprinkling in my commentary as the clip plays out. It's only about a 4 or 5 minute clip, but some of the things that are mentioned, as I said, they are downright frightening. If you would like to have your voice heard and you would like to comment on this clip, you can go to radiofreeg.blogspot.com. You can leave something in the comment section for the posting of this particular show. And we also have the option, toll-free, continent-wide, from sea to shining sea, for you, 1-888-494-2263. That's 1-888-494-2263. Call and make your opinion count. Let's get to the clip.
Merrill Lynch warned that the Canadian housing market was showing signs of stress that could put it on the path to a U.S.-style kind of a meltdown in financials. Our next guest, however, says there's little cause for concern. I'm afraid of
Americans. Well, of course, that wasn't actually in the clip. I just decided to throw that little nugget in there. And, of course, we have super producer Mumbles working the boards, producing the show to a 5-star quality, as always. Okay, let's get some meat here, and then we can pick at the bones.
And there's not going to be a market crash out there. And Derek Holt is Vice President of Economics at Scotia Capital. Derek, good to see you.
Good to see you too, Pat.
The argument that was put forward by Merrill Lynch earlier today was that, hey, way back in 2005, household net borrowing got to 7% of disposable income in the United States. And they go on to further to say that we've seen the same kind of growth in Canada in terms of disposable income. And in fact, you have a chart that charts household liabilities as a percent of personal disposable income that would kind of reinforce what Merrill Lynch is stating as well. Why do you think that Merrill Lynch has it wrong?
Well, no, I think that if you look at a very selective time period at the start of this decade, sure, Canada had similar debt growth compared to the United States, but the cycles are very different if you look at it in a longer run sense. The U.S. recession at the start of the early 1990s was brief and technical, and they rebounded a whole lot faster. Canada's was deeper, longer. It took pent-up demand much longer to start to get unleashed, only towards the end of the 1990s. So if we look at debt growth in the full cycle of the last 20 years, Canada's debt growth has dramatically underperformed, and our chart actually, just to correct things a little bit, shows that over the past 20 years, debt growth relative to incomes in the United States has far outstripped debt growth in Canada. The endpoint measure that matters most is leverage. And debt as a fraction of assets by that leverage measure stands at 20% in Canada. It stands at 26% in the United States. So 30% more debt has been used by Americans to acquire assets than is the case in Canada.
So let me be the first one to simply say, hogwash, because this is bullshit. Everyone within the sound of my voice knows that if you are buying items on credit, there are lots of people who live nice long lives and all they do is pay the minimum. As you work, hopefully your salary goes up, your minimum payments go up, you buy a little bit more. There is so much credit out there, it's ridiculous to sit and have these two people throw percentages back and forth at one another. Household debt here, start of the 90s, blah, blah, blah. I was there at the start of the 90s. Okay? I will forever remember my father's words when, as things were blowing up in the States, everything was cool in Canada. It was all cool in the gang. Then, after a little while, things started noticeably getting worse, and my father said, "So, I guess that's how long it took for it to finally get up here." And it only makes sense, because as things go poorly for the States, it will take time to work through the system and get to us. Now, in Canada, we never really got on to the whole subprime mortgages, and they're going to start talking about that a little bit later on in the clip. I'll give you a quick primer right now. Subprime does not mean that these people are all getting fantastic deals when they go out to buy houses. No, no, it's exactly the opposite. Whoever called it subprime is a marketing genius. Subprime actually means, you know what, you, sir, Johnny Brown Shoes, you are a credit risk. You don't make enough money. You don't have enough assets. Why the hell would I lend you money? So, they paid a penalty. They paid extra on their mortgage. They didn't get a deal on the mortgage rate. They actually paid more. The difference being, at the time when all these mortgages were taken out, early 2000s, we'll say, the interest rates were so low. We're talking 1 and 2% in the United States. People were begging to give loans. So, they get someone who comes in and is already a risk. They cannot afford a conventional mortgage. And you give it to them in this setting, which is essentially the best of all possible worlds for a borrower. You get someone who actually has some money put aside, has good income coming in, they can go out and buy themselves a mansion, because they might even pay it off in the next 10 years or 15 years, whatever the case may be. These people are going in, they're already behind the eight ball, and they don't take into account that the mortgage rates are going to go up. Okay? These rates are not going to stay down where they are. So yes, you can go and you can make your interest-only payments when you've got, you know, 1.7%, but because you're a risk, you're getting it at 3.2. Oh my god, 3.2. Like, if I had 3.2% of my mortgage, I'd be dancing in the street. But anyways, as the interest rates go up, these people find that they cannot even make the interest-only payments on their mortgage. And then they start defaulting. And as they start to default, the credit spiral just starts to eat away at itself. So people can tell me that, yes, Americans are using more of their debt. Hey, that's fine. Because in Canada, we never got that crazy on the debt cycle. But you know what? We still have car leases, credit cards, buying items on credit. It's all still there in Canada. And as long as we can make our payments, yes, everything will be fine. But you know what? Those people who used all their debt in the United States to buy the stuff that is being taken back, a repo man's coming in the middle of the night, putting your house on a flatbed truck and taking it away from you, and you're lucky if you're not still in it, you know what? That is going at some point to affect us. And I don't know when it's coming, but it's coming and it's going to be ugly. Let's get back to the clip.
Okay, now I'm getting it. So this is the whole argument that Americans were using their households as kind of like ATMs.
Yeah, that's one of the differences. Let's step back a moment, perhaps. We're not arguing that there are going to be sunny days ahead for Canadian housing markets. We do think that the volume of new home construction activity, the volume of resales, will all continue to pull off as we go into next year. We do think there is a further price correction in the cards going forward, and we're already down 5% on resale prices average nationwide now compared to a year ago. We agree with that. But to make arguments that the mortgage market in Canada is exposed to U.S. stock imbalances, I think, is flat out irresponsible, to be frank. And I think it reflects many, many stark differences in the composition of the Canadian mortgage market in comparison to the United States. One of them is, as you correctly point out, the mortgage equity withdrawal market, which in Canada is nothing like what it has been in the United States.
And here is where everything that exemplifies why economics is a complete sham comes out. We have this gentleman here who's saying, yes, things in Canada, yeah, well, they're not building as many houses, and there's going to be a price correction, which means your house is going to be worth less. Just come out and say it. So we have a price correction, we're building less houses, and, you know, there's going to be a little bit of trouble, but it's really just going to be a hiccup. It's going to just be a little, and that's going to be it. This is where I start to get deathly afraid. Yes, it's true that Canadians don't... It just seems to be something in the culture. Maybe it's because of the immigrant culture that is still readily apparent in Canada, and you don't have that melting pot society that you have in the United States. But I know my parents were terrified of debt. Any kind of debt. They didn't even want to put their house on debt. Like, if they could, they would have waited 30 years and paid for their house in cash, if that was even a remote option. It's just something that they don't do. People who come from places in the world where they don't have a lot of money, they don't like to be in debt, because they see debt as purely a bad thing. There's a point to be made for that, but a strong counter-argument can also be made. You have to use your debt. It is a financial resource. The people in the U.S. were using their gigantic mortgages because they have, now they have something. They have something they can hold in their hands. They have collateral to go out and get more debt. And so people are spending the money that's supposed to be building up in their house. The equity that's in their house, they're taking it out. They're essentially taking that house and saying, look, I've got a house. You can loan me more money to someone else. And that person says, well, I mean, the guy does have a house. That's what they mean by borrowing against the equity. You could take money out of your house. You can get a second mortgage. You can get a third mortgage. As long as you can make the minimum payments, you're fine. It's like a gambling. It's like a gambling disease. It's a big game to see how much shit you can get without paying for it this very minute. And whoever has the biggest pile of shit wins. Okay, let's get back to the clip. But before we get back to the clip, seeing as how there is a economic downturn coming, I'd like to do something that I haven't done in a little while, which is promote the swag shop. If you think, like this gentleman, that everything's going to be fine and dandy, and you have a dollar that you don't want, by all means, head on over to the Radio Free G swag shop. I'll be glad to take that dollar from you in exchange for some of the finest merchandise that you can purchase on the interweb. We'll hit the promo for the swag shop, and then we'll get right back to the interview.
Dare to be different.
Radio Free G already looks after your mind.
Be your own trendsetter.
Now, let Radio Free G look after your body. Head to cafepress.com/Radio Free G for the official swag shop.
It's not about the designers or the price, but how you rock it.
Now you can show your support for your favorite podcast by wearing the Magneto Award-winning Radio Free G logo.
And it starts with confidence.
For the ultimate in cool swag.
For those who have something to say.
Head to cafepress.com/Radio Free G.
You actually give us a chart of homeowners' net equity as a percentage of household real estate. And in the United States, you're getting into the high 40s kind of a number on a percentage basis, where in Canada, it's relatively stable around 70%. Derek, I guess the bottom line is, are Canadian banks therefore a lot safer?
Yes, I think so, on so many different counts. You know, the products were different. In Canada, subprime mortgages were 5 or 6% of outstanding mortgages. In the United States, it was triple that share. As a share of origination, subprime mortgages in the U.S. at the peak in 2004 to 2006 were 1 out of every 4 or 5 mortgages. And subprime in the U.S. is closer to your worst quality clients. In Canada, subprime is more like the U.S. near-prime marketplace. It's not that distressed. Furthermore, the ARMs, or adjustable rate mortgage resets that caused so many problems for American borrowers, don't really exist in Canada. The comparable products parallel in Canada is the variable rate mortgage, which gets repriced gradually over the cycle, not in a sudden shock fashion like it did in the U.S., causing great distress to American household borrowers. The final point I'll make is that from a bank standpoint, the fact that Canadian banks fund their mortgage portfolios on balance sheet with stable deposit funding and aren't subject to the same degree of reliance upon lines from other institutions and securitization activity makes them very differently exposed. And much of that securitization activity is done through the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation, which enjoys explicit government backing in Canada, where we avoided the gray area with respect to the backing of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in the U.S. marketplace.
Derek, thank you for clarifying this for us. Appreciate your time.
It's a pleasure, Pat. Thank you.
Derek Holt, Vice President, Economics, Scotia Capital.
You're in the hospital, surrounded by family and friends, and even the doctor starts to cry. You know you're screwed. You're listening to Radio Free G.
And it takes number one Radio Free G announcer Big V, with one of our patented one-shots here, to essentially sum up what it is that is going wrong in the U.S. The banks are crying, and they're supposed to be the ones that help you with your money troubles. The problem in the U.S. is not that you have this downturn. It's that they are actually going to try and, again, as of the recording of this show, the decision has not been made one way or the other, but they are going to allow for government to come in on their shiny white horse and give hundreds of billions of dollars to shore up some of these financial institutions that wrote all of these bad debts. I don't agree with this for one second. The Canadian system is different because there are, I don't want to say checks and balances because that sounds like an American system, but there is more regulation in the Canadian free market economic system. Banks have tighter restrictions placed upon them through various vehicles like the Bank Act that do not allow them to, that do not allow themselves to overextend themselves in the marketplace. They have to have some real assets to make it through the bad times. In the U.S., as I said, Joe's Bank, completely different story. If you want to be the Wild West of the finance world, that fits in with the American culture, by all means. It's what made them the superpower that they are. They may not be a superpower anymore, but that is what brought them to the dance, to turn around and run to government, to have this paternalistic instinct to say, oh, that's okay, I'm going to come and make everything better, thinking that the federal government can just walk in, and they've already done it. As was mentioned with the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, that was kind of along the lines of the Canadian Mortgage and Housing Corporation. That has now become part of the American federal government again. At one point it went private, and then they came in and got a bailout. A lot of the banks have already been given some money. Some were allowed to fail, like the Lehman Brothers. Others were given money and became de facto government properties. So the American government is going to take the public money of Americans and is going to use it in a way that no one would ever have imagined that it is going to be used before, which is a hot beef injection right into the financial market. Government regulation and the invisible hand of the market have never been closer than they are right now. And that's why there's some pushback for this giant bailout or stimulus package, Main Street helping Wall Street, all the cliches that are going on. Just, you know, watch any American news channel for 10 seconds and you'll be sick of it. But that's what's going on right now. If this doesn't go through, that means there's going to be some long-term pain. If it does go through, it may only end up being a Band-Aid. No one knows for sure. Ask an economist, they won't tell you. An economist always says, well, on one hand, and then on the other hand. Maybe this, maybe that. They don't fucking know what's going to happen. They can't predict the future. All they can do is look backwards like everything else. They're a subset of the history department at universities. That's all they are. Anyways, on behalf of myself, Radio Free G, I encourage you to go to the website, radiofreeg.blogspot.com. Leave your comments there, or, of course, you can call the G-Band line, 1-888-49-G-BAND. That's 1-888-494-2263. From sea to shining sea, toll-free for you. Make your opinion count. Oh, man, I'm glad I didn't waste this sick day by not being sick. And, of course, also on behalf of the whole Radio Free G family, Super Producer Mumbles, and number one Radio Free G announcer Big V, catch you again next time on the G-Band. End transmission.
You have been listening to Radio Free G. Send all feedback and show ideas to radiofreeg@gmail.com or visit the website at radiofreeg.blogspot.com. Catch you again next time on the G-Band. End transmission.